So here are the key dates. The protected lists for the expansion draft will be announced at 4 o'clock in the afternoon a week tomorrow, Saturday the 17th. Yeah. The expansion draft will begin at 7 o'clock Eastern time on Wednesday night, July the 21st. The moratorium on the trade and waiver freeze will be lifted at 12 noon on Thursday the 22nd. The NHL draft begins Friday night the 23rd. Monday the 26th is the final day to submit qualifying offers to restricted free agents. And then the frenzy free agency begins at 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning, July the 28th. So the Toronto Maple Leafs have a lot of work to do here. And we have been throwing out some ideas in the aftermath of Travis Dermott's two-year, $3 million contract extension, a $1.5 million AAV.
Yeah.
Where do you think the Leafs' preference lies in terms of the name they lose to the Seattle Kraken?
I don't know if it's preference, but
Bad wording, but you know what I mean. Yeah. They would rather keep some over others.
Barring something before the names have to be submitted and the roster freeze, I think they're expecting to lose either Kerfoot or Dermott.
So why would Dermott? How do you think they got to the number for Dermott? Is what I'm curious about. Like, did you expect him to sign now for Dermott or a little later? Like, did the Leafs go to him and say, hey, we need you signed before because this is going to help us out or this is going to help you out? You might go there. Like, how do you think that all went? I'm curious to know why and where the number came from for Dermott.
I think I have a feeling that it's probably got something to do with the Arb case, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
That and he might not have gotten that number in ARB this year. What I'm thinking is that it's probably a number that benefits Dermott a little bit this year, and assuming he has a good year, it's probably a number that benefits Toronto or Seattle next year. Mm-hmm. That's the way I kind of see it. That's like I'm thinking like his ARB case. I don't know if he gets to 1.5 this year, but I think what the team is saying is that he's probably, if he has any kind of year, he's probably ahead of that next year. So I think it's a little bit of a trade-off.
All right. So they are thinking that it's either Kerfoot or Dermott. My natural
that's the impression I get.
Okay, so my natural instinct there, just in terms of age, in terms of potential upside, etc., would be Dermott on the $1.5 million per year, 2 year contract, knowing that he's still a restricted free agent when those 2 years are up. I would imagine that if the Leafs want the Kraken to take Kerfoot, they'd have to entice them. Would they not?
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, it might be true. But the other thing I'm looking at here, too, is that there's going to be a lot of defensemen out there. Now, I do think Seattle likes the idea of taking defensemen. You don't forget that Ron Francis, when he built the Hurricanes, did it through the blue line. So I think he will try to do this in a somewhat similar manner, but there are a lot of D out there. There might not be a lot of centers. And you know, Kerfoot's also a West Coast guy. Now his number's higher. He's got a little bit of term. And I think the Kraken are going to be very, very careful with how many players they take with term. I think they're going to want maximum salary flexibility. But centers are hard to come by, Scotty. And that's why I wonder if Kerfoot is the guy who might be appealing to them.
Do you look at Riley and if you can extend him, trying to do a deal with Seattle and exposing him and have draft picks or a prospect coming back or somebody that they're going to get?
You could do that. Mike, it's not a bad idea. Like, to me, anything's a good idea. I just, it's the cost, right? And I've heard Seattle is not making this easy on people.
Okay.
Yeah, I just, like, I'm hung up on, haven't talked in a couple of weeks, Elliot, but I think it goes back far enough that we've probably touched on this in one regard or another. Like, I'm really hung up on what Riley is, what they think Riley is, what Riley sees his dollar value at heading into his next contract. Like, I don't think any of these types of conversations need to be had if Morgan's got 3 or 4 years left on his contract. Quite, I'm 100% confident that you don't, because he's fixed in and he's locked in for a while. But that's not the case, and the negotiation window will open up here because he's entering the final year of his contract. Like,
well, they can talk now.
Yes.
They can't sign him until the 28th or whatever, but they can talk now.
Okay, so what do you think the Leafs see him as, and what do you think Morgan sees himself as, and how wide, if at all, is the gulf there?
Well, I look at it this way. I think Dubas has a lot of high regard for Riley. When they were considering the captaincy, a lot of people thought it was Tavares and Matthews, and it probably was. But I know that they considered Riley as another option. They ultimately decided against it, and I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they feel that Riley puts a lot of pressure on himself to begin with, and they didn't want to add more to that. But I know Dubas thinks very highly of Riley as a player in person, and I know the organization thinks very highly of how much he cares about being a Maple Leaf. I know that Riley likes being a Maple Leaf, but I do think that there's a limit to where Toronto will go. You know, I also think that, you know, there's another factor we haven't even mentioned here, and that is that, you know, because of the way last season ended, I think the Maple Leafs are going to have to make some really hard decisions, because if next year isn't a good year, I think there's going to be a lot on the line. Like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I think we talked about it last week too. You know, we're getting to the end of the line here for this group of players and some people in the organization.
Well, I'd go right to the top.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point you got to have some success.
Yeah. So I think that's, to me, that's even bigger than, you know, Riley's future. I think we're looking at an upcoming season that will be a franchise altering season one way or the other. So to me, I don't even think it's about Riley's future so much as it is everybody's future. And so I think that clouds the entire process.
If they do go out and make a big move and bring in a big free agent or make a big trade, who's at the top of your list for who they're trying to target?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of guys I'm looking at here. I'm wondering about a goalie. Like I've said, they're going to determine who the guys are that they want and try to make it work. I think there's going to be a goalie or defenseman, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a forward. And one of the guys I'm kind of wondering about is Bertuzzi from Detroit. I think that's a guy they've had some interest in. And he was hurt last year at the deadline. And I'm wondering if he's one of the guys they're going to look at.
A guy, just one of those guys who can round out your top nine. Help
well,
that
he's,
second, yeah, third line.
He plays a way that I think Toronto would like to add to their roster.
Because the one thing that stands out to me right now, Elliot, is there's just not a lot of forward depth there. Now, I could turn out to be completely incorrect if Nick Robertson slides in, takes a roster spot, and scores 15 to 20 goals in an 82-game rookie season. Like that sort of thing. That would also help the Maple Leafs. But,
sure.
But beneath the top four, and with Kerfoot dangling there as a possible get for Seattle in the expansion draft, like it doesn't take you very long to go down that list of forwards and see the significant drop off.
Yes, that is definitely true. You know, you've got your core four. You know, there's Spets and Simmons there. I'm curious to see, I think Robertson's got to get a chance to play. I don't disagree with you at all on that one. You know, I'm very curious to see what they think about Engvall and, you know, what their future is with him. I definitely think that they're like I think Kemper from Arizona is likely getting moved, but I don't know if that's the guy Toronto's going to go for. He's got only one more year on his contract before he's up. I'm not sure. I mean, it's funny where I'm saying this because we just talked about how next year is such an important year, but I'm not sure that that's the move that they would do. But I think they're going to look out there and see, you know, who is the best available goaltender slash defenseman that they can get their hands on. But, you know, just the reason I think of Bertuzzi is this, I think the same thing that you do, because, you know, their forward depth is going to be thinned out a bit, particularly if they lose Kerfoot. And the other thing I just heard they had interest in him last year, but he was hurt at the deadline and obviously didn't play. So it wasn't a move that made a lot of sense.
You mentioned goaltending with Freddie Anderson. No chance of him coming back? And if he does go on the market?
I wouldn't say none, but I don't think so. Yeah. And I also think we're getting to a point that we're not counting on Hyman for next year either. It just seems very unlikely from what I'm hearing right now.
Like, what does a guy like Freddie get this year? Like, is he going to get more than 5 a year?
I guess that it depends on what someone wants to do, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's looking for that. He might have to sign a shorter deal. I mean, he might have to sign a shorter deal and then kind of prove it a bit. But I don't see that, Mike, but you never know what someone out there is going to do. Maybe Arizona signs him and says, you know, you come here and you bring Austin with you in a couple of years.
Oh, God. All right. At Frege HNIC on Twitter for any and all responses.
It's my Friday morning humor. Okay?
Yeah. No, but it's true. Like, this is what they're up against. I got 3 years left of Austin Matthews. Like,
oh, come on. 3 years. There's so much time. I wouldn't worry about that.
There's so much time, Elliot.
Yeah.
I woke up the other day and it was my 20th birthday. I can tell you what, I'm a long ways past 20 now. Time flies.
Well, it's not our fault you threw away 30 years or however you are.
I didn't say I was blaming you. I didn't say I was blaming you at all. With Elliot Friedman. How creative do you think the Tampa Bay Lightning get to fix their cap situation? They've got 17 players under contract for next year at $85 million. They're $3.5 million over the cap with six players to sign to round out 23. Mm-hmm. You have, I think, 11 players, if the math I did the other day is correct, making at least $4.8 million. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be what we expect, the Tyler Johnsons, et cetera, or is there going to be a name where we go, oh my goodness, they traded that guy?
Well, first of all, I think that one thing we've learned is that Tampa will do absolutely anything to win, right? So I think you look at it this way. You know, they probably lose Coleman and Goodrow, who are going to have a lot of interest. You know, the one guy they tried to move last year and they couldn't was Johnson. I was talking to a couple of people during the Stanley Cup final. You know, they think Johnson might be easier to move this offseason, Scott, because he had he had an impactful playoffs and he had a great attitude despite, you know, a really difficult year where he was on waivers a couple of times. And he didn't even dress the night they raised the banner. So, you know, there are some people wondering if he's still got 3 years left, but the fact that there's another year gone from his deal, maybe he might be more appealing to some teams this season. So that would certainly help them. You know, the other guy is Killorn. They came very close. I shouldn't say that. But there were other teams who thought he was getting traded last year, and the Kucherov situation allowed them to keep him. You know, just what we've learned about Tampa is they will do anything to win. And I think that's why you can expect them to be creative. You can expect them to see what every possible angle is out there. The difference between this year and last year is because of the expansion draft, you don't have time. Last year, they had a lot of time, and they were able to wait and figure out that Kucherov wasn't going to be able to play. They don't have that as much time this year simply because of the expansion draft. So it might force them to make a move earlier, but I have a feeling they're well in front of what they have to do there.
Do anything, but not move on from your captain, right? That's out of the question.
Well, it's just that, remember last year they asked him and he gave them no willingness to move, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's clearly happy there. I think, by the way, I think he was playing hurt too. Like, I don't think he was close to healthy. And, but, you know, he's shown, if you go back to last year, he showed, I do think they talked about him with some teams last year. I think Vegas was potentially one of them. But I don't think he did an interview at the end of the season with Eric Erlandson, who's covered them for years. And he just said he had no desire to go anywhere.
Hmm. Vladimir Tarasenko asks out of St. Louis.
Yep.
There have been health issues. There have been productivity issues in limited action this year. He's got a couple years left on a big money contract. Mm-hmm. How movable is that for St. Louis?
It's a tough one. It's a very tough one. And to be honest, I think this is a both sides kind of thing. I think St. Louis wants to move on from him, and I think he obviously wants to move on from them. You know, I didn't know Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic had some really good details yesterday. I knew he was upset about one of the shoulder surgeries. I didn't know he was upset about two of them. And, you know, that's a pretty big deal. You know, Mike, you know, if a player loses faith in team doctors, that's a big problem. That's a really big problem. So, you know, the problem is not only is the cap hit high, but I think the cash is $2 million over the cap this year. I think his cash is around 9.5. That's going to be really tough. Now, he's a talented guy. There's no question. He's just been hurt a lot and played a lot. So, you know, one of the things I know this year with the Arvidsson deal, even though, you know, that's not anywhere near as high a number, but there was a lot of discussion about player health because he suffered some pretty bad injuries. I think that's going to be the big one to me is, you know, how, like, you know, one, I remember years ago talking to a few GMs about this, about the science or the theories behind signing two players to long-term deals. And one of the things they all talk about was, is this a guy who stays in your lineup? And, you know, people have injuries and things change all the time. But generally, you know, one of the things you do when you sign someone to a long-term guy is you talk about, is this a guy we have to drag out of the lineup or drag into the lineup? And, you know, the fact that Tarasenko hasn't been able to stay healthy, that is probably an even bigger question than the salary of the contract.